Well, this will take a little bit different tone from the last couple of talks, so you can kind of sit back and relax, not have to listen so quiet, carefully. One thing, first, I mentioned that I've changed the title. When I started working on this, I realized I couldn't cover a bunch of perspectives. So these are just some perspectives. The other thing, I'm going to go through these. I'm going to have to highlight this and not chase rabbits, or we'll be here all day, and you'll leave me talking up here. What inspired me to do this is last year I started doing a little bit of arithmetic and realized that last year was my 50th year involved with cotton breeding. I started in 1970 and learned all the some mundane activities that are associated with cotton breeding and continued that in 2019. You see the common denominator through those 50 years is cotton breeding. So I'm going to take this opportunity to look at some things that have changed besides the color and density of my hair. I'm going to talk about these particularly in about, I've categorized these in about five different areas. We'll spend hopefully most of the time talking about things that have changed relative to cotton yield. In terms of non-plant aspects, technical changes, the monster thing that's changed is computers. In 1970, we didn't have personal computers. Computers was off in another mainframe, off in another building, and us graduate students didn't even—they wouldn't let us even walk by it. I mean, but because we didn't have personal computers, there was no electronic data analysis. I still contend that our graduate students could learn Nelson variance a lot better by doing mean squares and sum squares and mean squares by hand rather than pushing a button. But I don't want to go back. There's no word processing. We were literally cut and paste. There was no computer-generated labels, forms, the computer-related devices, no seed counters, no harvest weight systems, no HVI, no APHIS. Communication, there was no copiers. When I did my master's thesis, copiers were done with carbon paper, which was no big deal until you made a mistake. And then it was a pain, a headache. No emails, no texting, no cell phones, no online information, no online sources. As I put this together, I realized we were operating in the dark ages. It's hard to imagine not having these things available to us today. Legislative changes, I think it's kind of interesting that in 1970, when I began plant breeding, the same year that PPP got passed, that Variety Protection Act had a, I don't know that we can understate what it, the effect it has had upon plant breeding and including cotton breeding. State-funded cotton breeding programs have certainly declined. In 1970, there were seven state-funded cotton breeding programs in the Mid-South. Now, there are three. And when I retire, there may be two. I'm not sure. That's been the trend. I hope that doesn't happen. Funding for state from state legislators for research has declined. When I went to Mississippi State in 1978. I never did try to go for any extramural funding. There was funds there. I don't know where it came from. But Johnny, I maybe you gave it to me. I'm not sure. But anyway, there was that. Now so much of our time is chasing funding, and that wasn't the case at that time. Regulations associated with environment, use of chemicals, pesticides, and aspects of employees, all of these type of regulations, paperwork has really increased over the years. Well, let's look at the plant itself. The plant genetics, we're still dealing with the same karyotype. It hasn't changed. We're dealing with a lot of different genes coming from other species. Transgenes has revolutionized our cotton breeding aspects. Today, molecular markers, I just marvel at what we can do in looking at genes. Genes were somewhat of a nebulous term when I began. Now we can, as you've seen in the previous talks, they can map them out into very specific aspects. Greater understanding of gene action gives us a great more tool. In terms of plant development, I would contend we have not changed vertical and horizontal flowering intervals. The basic structure of that plant is still essentially the same. I would suggest that if you look in our varieties today, there's much fewer and smaller monopodial or vegetative branches. And to me, that's from a structural standpoint has been the biggest change in plant structure. In 1970, we were dealing with a bunch of morphological traits. That's what we were chasing to mainly for insects, for insect tolerance or resistance. There was a proliferation of insects or morphological traits, and that proliferation has subsequently declined, particularly with the transgenes. I think now we deal with a much lower and more uniform plant density than we did then. And a lot of that comes from the plant management. Now we basically, producers plant to stand. The only place you see people thinning is out in our research plots anymore. But this being able to plant lower plant densities affects the plant structure and really the whole management of the plant. There's been a tremendous increase in irrigation, particularly in Arkansas. In 1970, I would guess maybe 10% of the cotton was irrigated. Now it's 90%, or somewhere in that neighborhood. Plant growth regulators, we did have some defoliants and desiccants that we used in 1970. Since then, we've gone using picks, bowl openers, and that's really changed our end-of-season management. And there's also a great increase in monitoring of plant development. But in 1970, all we would do is chasing bugs or trying to count them. As far as cotton pests and diseases, today we have a lot less seedling disease. And really up through about 2000, I was very confident that I could walk into any field in the Mid-South, pull up some seedlings, and so show you sublethal seedling disease. That's not the case today. We've made tremendous increase in seed quality, particularly seed treatments to reduce seedling disease and our seed handling. I don't know that we've really increased resistance to seedling diseases, the specific pathogens, but we have reduced it by our seed treatments. We have less verticillium today due to increased tolerance, and I really base that because verticillium wilt generally increases as yield increases. Well, we've increased yield in these areas where verticillium occurs. There's still vert there, and it's a problem, but it has not increased proportionally to the yield increase. So I think we have much better tolerance to vert wilt today than we had then. There's less bow rots due to our earlier maturing cottons. Also, plant growth regulators and bowl openers have really facilitated reducing the amount of bow rots. But there's more nematode problems. Sometimes I wonder if it's just because we have more nematologists, but we have more nematode problems today. Insects, the big deal is that we eradicated the boll weevil. We tried to get some resistance. We didn't go too far on resistance to boll weevil, but we eradicated the boll weevil. Bollworm, budworm, we were looking at for morphological traits in 1970. Now transgenes, the BT genes, have pretty much taken care of bollworm, budworm. Tarnished plant bug, though, has become a greater problem as we've stopped spraying for boll weevil and boll worms. Then now we spray for plant bugs. So we've just changed pests. As far as weeds, in 1970, few herbicides. We were starting to incorporate herbicides that pruned lateral roots that had some problems with it. Today, our management system is dictated by the transgene. That's where you decide on variety. You decide what transgenes you want, then you pick your variety. The management system dictated by transgenes and herbicides. We have less grass problems, but more resistant pigweed problems, and I would contend we got a lot less root pruning with our systems today. Now, cotton yield. Here's a graph showing the cotton acreage and yield in Arkansas from 1927, and I don't quite go back that far, but you can see there's an inverse relationship. As cotton acreage has come down, yield has gone up. If you look specifically at acreage, there's been four times when you had a major peak in a lower amount of acreage. Two of those back in the 1930s with Agriculture Adjustment Acts in 1933 and 1938, in which the government mandated fewer acres. Then again, in 1983, we had our PIC program, payment in kind. Farmers were paid to not plant cotton, and thus we had much lower acreage. Then in 2015 was another dip, and that was somewhat it was due to the low cotton prices, but also we had a horrible planting season that year that many intended acres were not planted. So those are the four dips that we've had in cotton acreage. In cotton yield, I'm suggesting that we've had two plateaus, and we may be in a third. And I want to look at those a little bit more specifically. The first one was very well defined. This is a graph that Bill Meredith published back in 1982 at these meetings, showing U.S. yield, not just Arkansas yield. But you can see that in that 1965 or so through 1980, it was not only a plateau, it was yield decline. And that was a great concern throughout the industry at that time. And in fact, 1977, we had a session of papers. There was 13 papers in a group, then two other papers that addressed this yield decline very specifically. And we were right in the middle of that yield plateau at that point. Again, in 1982, which we didn't know at the time, but that kind of coincided with toward the end of that plateau, we had another session of six papers that addressed this issue. One thing I would suggest to our note is both of these are in the mechanization conference, production mechanization conference. It's not in the big book, the research conference. These may be a little hard to get, but if you have the opportunity, you should try to get a copy of particularly the second group of papers. Really has some wonderful insight. Bill Meredith kind of, I think, summed up in 1982 in that sessions what was going on. He said, the circumstantial evidence from this investigation strongly suggests the cause of decreased cotton yields is largely due to our misuse of technology. That is, we had incorporated every discipline and incorporated some major differences in management, and we just hadn't put that together real well. And there were some problems. I like to call it technology drag, and that's really what we were dealing with. The recovery from that first yield plateau, we started using short season concepts. Don't have time, but there's a whole, we completely changed the varieties that we're planting and going to short season varieties. We decreased plant populations associated with it because we had improved seed quality and improved seed and disease control so that we could manage our plant populations better. We increased irrigation, and that was particularly stimulated by the drought that we had in 1980. That really was the catalyst that really pushed us to a lot more irrigation. Improved nitrogen management, improved insect management, and improved herbicide use. All of these technologies started coming together. The second plateau was not quite as defined, but I put it as about from 1988 to 2000. But if you look at that 10-year moving average, it's a pretty well-defined area. We didn't have any special sessions on this, but my feeling on this second plateau is due to the early part of it was due to poor insect control. We had worms and worms particularly that got resistant. We couldn't control them, no matter how many insecticide treatments you made. Then we introduced BT. That gave us control of the bollworm, but there was a genetic lag as we introduced these BT genes were back crossed into old varieties, so we had a genetic lag. And I think that's really what was involved with that second plateau. The recovery from that second plateau was a decrease in acreage that helped to increase yield. Increased use of plant growth regulators, picks, fertilizer, different varieties. Boll weevil eradication was a big deal. Bollworm, BT cottons, genetic improvement. And I really want to make a take-home message for you today that these transgenes didn't increase yield. The transgenes helped us control bugs and weeds. But those genes themselves did not increase yield. But I think they were a catalyst for more breeding. They put a lot more money into our breeding programs, particularly the private breeding programs. As a result of that, we end up with improved transgenic cottons, and we came out of that yield plateau. Are we in a third yield plateau? Starting these data would suggest about 2005, if we may be in that. If we are, I suggest it's because, again, perhaps some genetic lag as new genes are introduced, this lag of bringing them to the forefront into new genetics. Then the second thing I really question, we're getting up to a yield plateau, a yield levels that it's hard to make more increases, particularly if you consider the climate that we have in the Mid-South region. So what is the recovery from Yield Plat 2? I was reminded of the musical Oklahoma, and yet a cowboy sings a song titled Kansas City. He'd been up there, and he said, they've gone about as far as they can go. And I kind of wonder, if it, are we reaching that point in our yield? Finally, very quickly, fiber quality. Here's some fiber quality I took from the Arkcel variety test in 1970, 86, 2002, 2018. Each year, these are essentially the same locations, so they're comparable data. Micronair hasn't changed. We float around, but there's really been no change in micronair. Length, wonderful increase. We're dealing with some lengths now we've never dealt with. The thing that blew me away as I put this together, we get so excited about our increase in length, but how much increase have we managed? It's a tenth of an inch. That tenth of an inch is very important in the textile world. And that amazes me that a tenth of an inch makes that much difference. Anyway, strength, another substantial increase in strength. In 1970, I couldn't compare them because it was reported in PSIs. And the fiber people told me that you cannot translate PSI to grams per text. It had an R-square about 0.5, something like that. So I didn't even try to do it. But if you compare from 1986, that strength has we've had a substantial increase in strength in our varieties. So finally, summary, what I think is the major changes occurred during my career, short-season varieties. When I started, we were growing Stoneville 213 and Deltavine 16. And then we saw that change to short-season varieties, and that changed our whole management approach and management system. Being able to plant to stand, that's a very important aspect of our total crop management, that we're able to have a lot more control over our plant population. Expanded irrigation certainly adds to yield and yield stability. Plant growth regulators, we've gotten shorter, more uniform plant height, which has a lot of effects on our total management of the plant. Bow openers, in 1970s and 80s, to get earliness, we'd pick twice, wouldn't we, Jack? And you'd get percent first pick. Nobody reports percent first pick anymore because we pick one time. So that's not a parameter that we deal with anymore. But we are dealing with that once over harvest is extremely important. Transgenes have given us improved insect and weed control. Planting and harvest equipment, not so much in our research, but on the farm, much faster, greater acreages per producer. Fiber length and strength. The important part of that increase is that it has, at least in some of our varieties now, we've neutralized that negative relationship between yield and fiber quality, which historically exists. Breaking that interaction, breaking that linkage is a phenomenal achievement we've occurred. Yield increase in Arkansas in these 50 years, we've doubled our average state average, yield average. And I take full credit for that. That's a big change. Twice the yield that we were making in 50 years. The question I'll leave with you, one, is where does that yield increase come from? I don't know that we have that well defined. Just how, where, I know there's more bows, but where are the bows? And, you know, Johnny has addressed this some, but I think that's some real something that we perhaps need to look at. And then the other question is, what's the future? And I will not even pretend to try to suggest what I know is coming in the future. 50 years gone by very rapidly. For you that are just starting, blink your eyes a couple of times and they'll be gone. It's been a tremendous time because I've been able to work with a very wonderful crop and very wonderful people like you. Thank you.